Les colloques du Collège de France.
Hi everyone. So first, this paper we work on with Pierre-Michel, which is here, but for sake of for presentation's sake, I'm going to do the presentation, but he's here also to answer all the questions that you might have, and for which I don't have the answer. So the paper is called Bypassing the Box Office. Performance, Risk, and Career Inequalities Among Women and Men Film Directors in France. So already having a title like this can be quite provocative, because the French is always very proud of having this idea of cultural exception, where movies are done not only for profit's sake, but for aesthetic reasons or for authorship reasons. And so I don't know if you saw the recent debate about the Palme d'Or. I mean, among the last three Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival were two French women directors. And so she went on Justine Triet went on this idea that the French movie making needs to be protected from this idea of being connected to any sort of metric and so on. So just we dive into this sort of questions, whether or not directors are assigned to some sort of box office metric. So we're interested broadly in this project about talent risk and inequalities in the film industry. And we specifically look at contract data. This is sociologically what we're most interested in, the idea that if you look at filmmakers' contract in this, but contracts in general, at a sociological level, this is a moment when you can understand how power dynamics are made and created. So the large research questions that we try to tackle is, how do filmmakers navigate the pressure to perform, survive, and negotiate career returns in this industry? So a few things that make this industry very specific and very interesting. So it's a very, very, very risky industry, especially in France. So directors that we have in our data set, they've been on average active 10 years before they can make a feature film, which is the holy grail of filmmaking. Not short movies, but a long feature, especially a fiction movie. This is something that you work a lot to achieve. And usually it takes about 5 years to put together, between pre-financing, production, post-production, and so on. So there's not so many films you can do in your career, and it's a very large endeavor. And then on top of that, you have a very, very low chance of surviving. And so I'll show you some graphs later on. And so in case you have a box office bust, especially on your first movie, it's very likely that you'll get out of the industry. And so reputation is the name of the game. This is specifically true in France, where directors are seen as big authors and not necessarily just technicians, as they are sometimes in Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood has some names, but it's you put less emphasis on this than in France. So on a broader level, we're interested here in looking at what we call performance reward bias. It's the idea that certain groups of director will be able to earn better returns depending on their performance track record. So if you make a good or a bad movie, how much can you lean on this to improve your capacity to survive and then negotiate better income in the future and so on. And so to give you the sort of the paradox of this paper is that a lot of this literature has shown that there's, for instance, a performance reward bias that is detrimental to women, which means that equal productivity level or performance achievements, then women are less able to capitalize on these achievements to gain career better career outcomes, such as income or promotion and so on. And we find the reverse. And so kind of the key here is, how do we explain this reversal? So along with video game production and TV shows, feature films are some of the most capital intensive project that you can find within the creative industries. In France nowadays, there's a relatively stable number of projects, around 200 feature films that are produced every year, which is a lot for a country like France. It's been growing stably, but it's around 200. And there's an increasing pool of candidates for a variety of reasons, due to democratization, attractiveness of from foreign capital, and film school attendance, and so on and so forth. Today, there's still 25% of women among directors, and it's been a slow growth. So 30 years ago, it was 20%, now it's 25%. It's been a little better, and we have some superstars that tend to show for it, especially those who win the Palme d'Or, but it's still a slow growth overall. And so what is specific about France is that most of the movies are pre-financed. the idea is that you, the producer doesn't take really any risk in terms of financial viability compared to the US, for instance. I mean, it's more complex than that, but simplifying, you have different ways to get money from either public channels or private channels, especially TV channels. It's not the same channel, but like actual TV channels and distributors. And so they give money beforehand if you're able to convince them that your movie is going to be a great movie, it's going to make some money and so on. And so it all rests on the shoulder of the director to actually convince these stakeholders to put their money, put their chips on your side of the table. Is that clear? Anyone can stop me if you have questions. And so we try to understand how do prior experiences and performances drive survival chances in the industry. L'avance sur recette existe toujours. That's
the contest. If you win the contest,
yeah.
That helps you a lot. I've gone through that experience myself.
So this idea that you get, if you've done some movies in the past, there's different ways to get the avance sur recette, then you automatically will get some money.
It's a content, you submit a screenplay,
yeah.
And if you make it to avance sur recette, of course, then it's easier to get co-producers.
Yeah, but there are certain companies who have made movies in the past who can guess automatically, l'avance automatique. And so we come back to this in the data actually, because that actually plays a role. So a few quick elements. So this is the number of directed feature films by the number of directors. So you have all directors in France they've been active since 1994. So that's it's around 2,200 film directors. So you see a sharp drop after the first movie, and then there's very, very few directors who actually survive past the fourth or fifth movie. So short careers, high risk. And then the line here that you see is the one really key variable here is the fixed payment, is the idea that you get on your next film, you're going to get an advance depending on the result of your prior film. And so you can see that this advance kind of goes up for the first movies, and then it becomes quite erratic because there's not so much data on the right side of the graph, but it's quite Parisian, and there's the sort of power law curve. It's the same for movie budgets, so you can see that, of course, it's much lower than in Hollywood. Most movies in France have budgets under 5 million, and this is specifically true for women who tend to be channeled towards low-budget movies, especially documentaries, not only, but at genre, you can control by genre, and you can show that even within a genre, you have these persisting inequalities. And so what data do we use here? So we have three main data sets that we try to combine. So the first two ones are in this first section. So first, we've gathered information on all close to 5,000 feature films that have been distributed in France between 96 and 2019. So these are movies that were actually made, not movie projects and so on. These are movies that people were actually able to see within the theaters. And so this comes down to almost 2,000 directors, because there's a lot of directors who do several movies. Hopefully that's one of our key variable. And then among these directors, we've extracted a sample of almost 600, close to 600 directors. And for those, we hand-coded all of their copyrights contract, which is basically the first document that a producer signs with the filmmaker, and so they decide on if the movie is going to be made, how much money will the producer give to the director for this movie, and so on. And so these are very complex and very heterogeneous contracts. They can range from 8 pages to 75 pages, and they really require a lot of hand, like human work. And so we've extracted 200 contracts for 3 years, 2006, 2014, 2018. And for these years, we have a complete sample. Meaning we have all the contracts that have been signed in France for 3 years. So even though we cannot do like panel stuff, because we cannot follow directors throughout their entire careers, we have this sort of like complete samples for different years, which allows us to understand an evolution within this. So then we've matched this contract data with information on the past careers of directors in France, and we thank the SACD who came here to listen to our presentation, but they allowed us to get some really, really exhaustive information about what those directors did before they directed their first movie. So that allows us to control for some of the heterogeneity in entering the career. And then finally, we gathered a bunch of information from online sources. You talked about IMDb. There's an equivalent in France called UniFrance. It's not a website only. It's a professional association, but they have a lot of very common. IMDb doesn't work for French cinema. That's part of the exception. You don't have very reliable information, so you have to go through UniFrance. And so, for instance, you can know if people have production companies, for which talent agencies they are represented. I'll come back to these mechanisms later. So we're basically interested in three things: how you enter the industry, how you survive in the industry, and how you actually make money from this within this industry. So we don't have a lot of data on entering. This has been covered also by some qualitative work. But basically, we've been able to extract some information on 353 first-time directors for which we have a complete career path before they directed their first movies. And so running that through various clustering methods, we can show that there's basically two clusters. It's very strong, like depending whatever the algorithm always comes up with the two same clusters. So there's basically a main bulk cluster where you have people who have done, no, where's the pointer? Yeah, so a lot of people have gone through short films. So this is the idea of the antechamber. You're supposed to direct short films and then have festival success, and then maybe later on you'll be able to direct your first movie. Most women are in this category, and they have a scarcer access to pre-financing. And then you have a more privileged cluster. It's a minority group, but basically consisting of script writers, so people who were not directors before but already wrote scripts for feature films. So there's this idea of multi-activity, which is really central to this industry. Most men are individuals in this category are men, and they have access to secure investment. To give you an idea, this is the difference in main budgets between clusters. So it's more than three times higher for the second cluster, so the more privileged cluster. And
that's
so
the channel, and you start being trainee, assistant, and all that channel is
no.
Also important.
No, it doesn't work really like that in France. There's some qualitative work that shows you if you're an assistant director, you'll be stuck as an assistant director your whole life.
I thought that also it's changed.
From what we know today, it's very rigid. There are some examples, but it's specifically for women, there's been this idea that...
I met Benex, he was assistant for CD.
That was at the time, but like, for instance, there's a lot of women who are assistant directors,
and
they never become directors. Some exceptions exist, like Claire Denis and some others, but it's fairly rare. So this is only... cinema type work, like author work, so of course it captures only part of the heterogeneity. To become a director, you can have, there's many possibilities for you to enter this industry. This data only captures your past career work, but we've gathered some other stuff. For instance, one really important thing is film school. So women attend film school basically twice as more as men. So this is really consistent with a lot of other industries, like the fashion industry, the art industry, and so on, where film schools tend to drive democratization. So we have only this is data from La Fémis, which is the main film school in France. There's others, but this is the main one, the most elitist one, let's say. And then there's another important point is that a lot of men, especially within this privileged cluster, are former producers. So they were already in the industry, but they were not authors. They were working as producers. And so you can see, for instance, that if you calculate the number of directors who are also producers at the time that they direct their first movie, the numbers tend to be a lot higher for women, but there is for men, sorry, but there's a very strong evolution. So you can see that the women producers are slowly catching up. So it's almost getting to similar levels for 2018. And on the contrary, and this is something that maybe some of you have not noticed, who are interested in the French movie industry, but a lot of French women directors have been former actresses. So you really have a polarization between men who were producers before and women who are actresses. So among the 20 most successful women directors, two-thirds were former actresses, whereas it's only 20% for men. So this is a very, very strong thing. So moving on to surviving. So what is interesting in the movie industry is that you have one really powerful metric, which is the box office success. And this is compared to other industries, like the fashion industry, what we heard before, it's easy to track the performance of someone. So then you can have also other aspects like critical reviews, word of mouth, and so on. But what is important with the quite unique with the box office is that it incorporates a lot of the critical aspects as well. For instance, if you have festival success, your movie comes out after the festival have been issued. And so the box office numbers kind of integrate already this critical aspect of it. So for instance, the Palme d'Or will come out, everybody knows that it has the Palme d'Or sign on it. So of course, the everybody expects the theatrical success of this movie to be a lot higher because of this Palme d'Or. So we basically, in this survival analysis, we use event history analysis. I guess we call that survival models in economics, but it's mostly the same. And we try to understand what drives survival chances from one movie to the other. So if a person has made one movie, how can we explain the movie, how can we predict the probability of making a second movie, a third movie, a fourth movie, and so on? So this is what we call in the literature the accumulative productivity values, which means we add up all the box office successes of the past films for one director. And so we have to use a specific model. I'll just explain later on. But as you can see, this is the percentages of surviving director between the first, the second and third movie, the third and fourth movie, and the fourth and fifth movie. And the rates are actually quite similar, and the rates for women are actually higher. But it doesn't mean that it's the same people that survive. And this is one of the key elements. And so women have to basically wait a lot longer to make a second movie, a third movie, and so on. This is a main source of inequality. So we use... It's a little bit, what is tricky is that the structure of the data is a little bit complex because you have, first you have delayed entry, which means that a lot of people don't enter the industry at the same time. And of course you have heterogeneity because of this. And secondly, people make multiple movies. And so you can't assume that making a third movie is independent of having already survived the first and second challenges and so on. So we have to use one specific type of model, which is often used in modeling tumor resurgences in cancer research. The idea that, of course, if you have treatment after a cancer, we don't know exactly what are your chances of surviving, but once you've had a first tumor, your chances of developing a second tumor are a lot higher and so on. So this is a little bit morbid, I'm very sorry, but this is exactly the model that we use to, because I think it really fits the movie industry. The more you survive, the better your chances are at surviving. And so so we basically estimate a Cox regression model using this specific framework, which is done through a stratification variable, which basically pulls subjects by failure order. The idea is that, of course, if you want to evaluate the effect of having directed your first movie on the fourth movie, you have to isolate. These are not separate effects. They have a specific order. You've made your second movie after you've made your first. You've made your third after you made your second, and so on. So. Right, this is a little bit technical, but basically what it shows you is that the coefficient, so what we measure here is the impact of selling one additional ticket on the chances of surviving in the industry. And so we measure it separately for women and men for surviving one's first movie, second movie, first movie, second movie, third movie. And so the coefficients, and this is the main result of this analysis, are a lot higher for women than for men. Which means basically you can say, on the one hand, women actually gain a lot more returns from having a successful movie, but you can also, and we understand it in the reverse way, is the idea that you have to make a very successful movie to kind of have better chances to survive in the industry, and this is less true for men. Much less, and the ratio actually increases as you go further in the career. So the ratio for the fourth movie is close to 14. So for equivalent success levels, the chances of surviving for low succeeding women are a lot lower than for men.
Yeah? If you make a big box office success, how many low success are you allowed to not disappear? Is it given conditional on high success? Does it increase the number of moderate success that are tolerated?
Yeah, we asked ourselves that question through this. We can't do it in a very, very elegant way because we don't have so many directors who actually survive past the third or fourth movie. This is why we do only K equal 4 for the main one. Otherwise, after we're left with very, very small samples. And so, but what is interesting is that in the industry, you have a saying that says you're as good as your last picture. So the idea is that you don't have any sort of institutional memory. Once you make a bust, this is specifically true in Hollywood, you'll get kicked out of the industry. And what we find is that actually this is true for women, but not for men. Even though the sample size is much lower for women, the effect of the second movie, for instance, the effect of the first movie will still have an impact on the third movie, irrespective of whether the second movie was a bust or...
For women.
Okay. So there is no memory for men, but there is memory for women, which means basically if you've made a bust for women and you are able to survive, then you're still the memory of that bust will still follow you later on in your career. Rather for men, it seems like the clock is reset at every time. And so we control for a bunch of variables like movie genre, the structure of movie financing, and also the cohort variables. So basically, being in fiction increases your probability of surviving. If you're a documentary filmmaker, it's a bigger hustle than in fiction, and of course. The younger the generations, the more difficult it gets. So compared to a baseline of a cohort from 96 to 2000, all the later cohorts have a lower chance of surviving it, except for the more advanced director, which makes sense.
Yeah, do you have a way to take into account the relationship between the actors and the film directors? Because you know there are some film directors that have that are a couple with the actors, and so I was wondering if you had a control or something.
No, this is something that it becomes very hard to measure the star power of an actor, and also it's actually a good point, but there's a lot of literature on star power and so on. Our guess is that since it's the same, the box office actually will integrate already part of that effect. Like if you have Depardieu in your movie, then people will go see the movie, and then it will increase the theatrical measure.
I agree, and the impact on future films could be also conditioned by the fact that you use the same actor.
Yeah. So we don't necessarily have that, but there's a way to understand it. I'll come back to this later on. In the idea that we try to capture industry resources and so social capital in that sense, and that could also factor in.
Just a quick question. You might have said this, I missed it, but if you just looked at the first film which is made and looked at the box office for men versus women, is there a big difference under the observables exchange?
But the problem is that we don't, since we have only data for people who actually made it to their first movie. That was the point of the few slides that we had before on what people had done before the first movie.
For the first movie.
Yeah.
I was just asking that.
Yeah, yeah. So. You mean in this data set?
Yeah.
In terms of past thing or just heterogeneity?
For the first movie.
Yeah.
First time you make a movie, who gets the bigger box office, men or women?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We've made some charts on this. Actually, for the first movie, it's very similar.
Really?
So it's something that I do not focus here so much, but it's the whole idea that maybe women make less profitable movies. Actually, it's not true. If you look at the charts, it's fairly equivalent. Like the budgets are much lower for women, but once you divide this by the box office success, the ratios are fairly similar.
That's quite interesting.
It's interesting. We need to rule out this thing, right? And the moment that the two curves actually diverge is for later on in the career. Of course,
the most simple type of discrimination is a bigger entry barrier for women than men. And what you described is, I think, consistent with that.
You're right. Yeah.
Women are more productive than making more outputs and further inputs. And that's consistent with simple kind of entry
barrier. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, I forgot, actually, I at some point I thought about including this thing, but we need to consistently rule out the idea that women directors have a lower productivity than men.
Well, I think that sounds like they're a
Yeah.
The more talented.
And all things considered, yes. So now, what can we say about the income returns, because that's also part of it. It's not only about surviving, it's also about making money. And so we study one specific outcome variable, which is the guaranteed minimum, which is basically a fixed advance on the contingent payment. So this is a little bit technical, but basically, once you sign your first contract, before the script has even been written, before you understand actors, before anything else, the producer and the director sit down and they put down an amount of money, let's say like 50,000 euros, and they say, okay, well, I'll give you 50,000 right now. And if the movie generates more than 50,000, then you'll start earning a variable income on top of the 50,000. So in France, since not a lot of movies actually make a lot of money, the guaranteed minimum is basically the main wage or the main income that these directors will get. So basically it's a hard negotiations, because they know that if you get 20,000, it's very unlikely that you'll get even like 21,000. You'll basically get your minimum, guaranteed minimum, and that's it. And so we try to understand what drives the differences between directors. So we had a very complicated slide on the complex multi-layered composition of the directors. So to just present you with the general idea, there's basically, in France, if you're a director, you earn both wages, that means as a worker, but basically what we call socialized wages. So it's the system of intermittence. So basically it's like if you were a technician on a movie, like an editor or someone working with light or sound and so on. And on the other hand, you earn money as an author. So droit d'auteur, or what people call copyright law in the US, except if it's a little bit different. And so in this, this is where you have variability, because in the socialized wages, this is predetermined by collective convention. So it's in the law how much you're allowed to make. There's little variation, but it's very, very small. So statistically speaking, it's more interesting to look at the droit d'auteur, because that's where you have so much variability between directors. And so, of course, there's the non-contingent part that I talked about earlier, which is the fixed advance. And then, of course, this fixed advance can be complemented by variable forms of income. So, of course, there is some money that you can make on gross profits, and then on net profits. And then, of course, there's some bonuses. For instance, if your movie reaches, I don't know, 1 million ticket sales, then you'll earn another 50,000 more, and so on. So we focus specifically on this, because this is where you see the most variability between authors. So again, a quick graph about the distribution of the fixed advance. So it's very, very, it's a very, very pronounced power law, again, also very detrimental to women. And then I think I'll skip this, there's a relationship between basically the advance payment and the variable, which basically depends on the risk. If you're, well, I think I don't have time, but I can comment on this in the questions. There's connection in the contracts between the fixed and the variable, which makes sense. It's some results that have been shown for finance and so on. And so we try to explain why the correlation between the box office measure that we have and the guaranteed minimum, so the fixed advance, is much higher again for women. So the correlation is 0.64 for women, so it's very, very strong. Almost all of the explainable variation for women in terms of income is explained by past box office successes, and for men it's much lower. So this raises the question of why and to what degree are men able to bypass the box office? Men, not only men, but like this is specifically true for men. And so there's two types of mechanisms that play here. Agents, and I'll come back shortly after that to these mechanisms. So we actually find that talent agencies are more play a big role for men directors, but not so much for women directors. And then industry capital, which means here the fact that people were or are still film producers on the side of being film directors. So this idea that you can switch from being an employee to a boss, and this is very specific to the French film industry. The idea that you can be a director and a producer sometimes for the same movie. Like we actually have some contracts where people are, they say, I, producer, and it's one name, and then enroll this director, and it's the same name, and you have exactly the same signatures on top and on the bottom. It's some sort of legal haziness. The idea is that if you don't work for the same boss the entire year, if you can show that you've worked for other bosses, other producers, then this is sort of legit, but it creates some obvious conflicts of interest where we have some contracts, I will not cite names, although they are very famous, but where you have really incredibly high fixed advances, and the people sign both ends of the contract. So of course you're going to sign a huge advance if it's yourself that you're signing for. And so this plays, of course, a role, as we'll show later on. So here, to measure this, we use quintile regressions, because the data is so cute that it's actually interesting to see for which segments of the distribution this relationship plays a role or not. And so the main results is that here again, like in the survival rates, the connection between box office entries and the fixed advance is much higher for women. And actually here you see a convergence as you increase the decile. So it means that this is basically this graph. So this plots basically the coefficients for men here and for women of the outcome of the quantile regressions for different quantiles. So here from 1 to, for different deciles here, from 1 to 10. And so basically you can see that the effect is much higher. It's very similar to begin with, and then starting from the second decile, it becomes much higher for women, and then it soon reaches a sort of plateau. So this is the part where you have a sort of glass ceiling effect, like the returns that you earn for your box office performance doesn't get much higher. And then the rates converge for a higher percentile. So of course that there, we have a very high intervals for women because the sample is much smaller, but it's still quite interesting to see that basically at the moment that you're really, really well entrenched in the industry, men and women kind of earn like similar rates. So going back to our results, you have this convergence that you can see here, and these are very, very, very strongly significant. And they're much higher for women. So you have a reversal of the performance reward bias that I was talking about. The idea that here, women who succeed actually make a lot more money than men. And so we understand it the other way around, saying like if women do not succeed, then they will not be able to make as much money. And so part of why, like the mechanisms, why that works, and we know this also from qualitative evidence, but this is, we can capture it to some degree through our data. The idea that you have certain connections with the industry. So for lower deciles, for instance, what seems to play a major role is the size of the producer firm. So we know actually the social capital of the firm, and we know that the bigger the firm, the more money you will make as a director. So what practically that means that if you're a young director, rather than trying to prove that you have so much talent and so on, you should try to convince a big producer that you can make a successful movie, which kind of makes sense, but it's an interesting thing to show. And this effect disappears past the third decile. So for people who make a little bit more money, having connection to a famous producer becomes not so important. Rather, at the other side of the distribution, we have a variable here that basically captures the number of films that a director has produced. Apart from being a director, he produces movie and he earns returns from this. And this effect becomes really high for higher deciles, which means that as a director, as you become more successful in your career, one of the most interesting things you can do is start your own production firms. And then try to make you will earn returns from this as your personal income from directing through your producing activities. And there's very famous examples like Luc Besson or Gaspard Noé or people like this who have made this. Once they were established, they started really successful production firms. And this does not work for women, which is partly due to the fact that there's not so many women directors, but that we think that this is one of the key results, the idea that there's so much cross-section between directing and producing that we should focus, of course, on gender inequalities, but we should also focus on, for instance, that women, that there's more and more women producers, rather than just equalizing the revenue. And I haven't included the right slide, but is this variable here, the agent. And so what is interesting is that the agent consistently plays a role for men and not for women. And this is quite paradoxical, because I don't know if you watch the show 10% or
Call My Agent.
Yeah, you can see that we see in the contracts that actually the 10%. Yeah, and the 10% thing is actually in the contracts. Like, the contracts we have is consistently 10%. What is interesting is that most of these agents are actually women. And you see that in the show, but we also see that in the contracts. And so it becomes paradoxical to understand why an agent that is a woman is not able to endorse her clients, her women clients, as well as the men clients. And there's qualitative evidence on this, and the intuition behind this is that, again, we go back to the one of our first slides. I said that most of the women directors in France are former actresses. And actually, this plays a huge part, because if you are in front of the camera, the expectations are very different in terms of norms and expectations. You're expected to be pretty, and you're expected to be passive, and you're told what you're supposed to do. Once you move behind the camera, then you're supposed to embody the sort of artistic archetype thing, where you're supposed to give order, being a manager, and so on. And so there's a lingering effect of these societal expectations. And so it becomes very hard, and we have very interesting quotes from qualitative work that says basically, the women agents said we're not able to defend our women clients as much, because we don't know what words to use. Because they usually, when they defend Luc Besson, Luc Besson doesn't need an agent, but they'll say, like, oh, he's very strong, he knows what he wants, he's made good movies in the past, and so on. So the intuition behind this is that there is a role played by what we call performance brokers, the people who help you turn your performance results into income later in your career. One or two remarks. So we do observe a reversal of the performance reward bias, and the only case that is similar to ours is academics. There are some recent papers now that tend to show that basically the impact of one additional paper, for instance, on the probability to get tenure is much higher for women in academia than it is for men. So it's kind of similar idea. So we have a process of leaky pipeline, of course, but we also have this idea that basically if the main thing in your field is surviving, this is where you're going to put all your chips. And then the payoffs will follow later on. If you survive, you'll obviously make more money, because you'll make successful movies and so on. But the most important point is to hedge yourself against bust. And so this is why very successful directors are able to do, especially men. They're able to sort of bypass the strict box office pressure and use other type of resources to hedge themselves in case they make a bust. They're still able to survive. And so this leads us to say that basically industry resources can partially offset the pressure to succeed for specific professional segments, and especially for men.
Okay? Here it's just movies. Have you looked at TV movies? There's another parallel. Do you include, you know, you have?
So we include this in...
So, I know now there is a big trend on TV to push for women directors and... Are you looking at...
So
the fact that you may go from movie to TV, mm-hmm. or back. Have you...
We've looked at this.
More series and more TV going on now.
It's a very good point, actually.
Has it changed a bit, the way?
So we have data on contract data.
Yeah.
So we know exactly if people have made like short movies for TV, for cinema, and so on. And so this seems to have, at least on our data, it has no impact on the survival chances. Mm-hmm. The only thing that it has, I think, if I remember correctly, the problem is that this is always, we play around with partial data, and in the survival model, we're not able to have so much information. This is very costly information to get. So the only sample for which we have this information is the contract data. And so I've included it in various forms. For instance, here I've put the only thing that seemed to have an effect was the fact that you've made short films before. And but I could include other things such as TV, and we have feature films and short films, but in the several models that I've tried, it doesn't have any sort of effect, which is interesting. Maybe it's a recent trend, especially with platforms and Netflix emerging, that if you make money out of TV, you'll be able to transfer into cinema. But in France, it seems to me intuitively that there is still a very strong distinction between audiovisuel, so TV, and movie, and movie people are seen as
TV. You can go from movie to TV. Number of people who go bust on movies,
They go back to TV.
They go to TV.
And some people back in the day would have like very famous directors in France would made less of a difference. They have very successful TV careers, but also make a very successful feature. It seems like now the divide between author movies and like commercial TV movies is a little bit more pronounced. But I think one of the hypotheses of this whole platform change is that this sort of goes down. Yeah.
So, building on what you just discussed, so in, you know, if somebody doesn't get tenure in academia, usually at least in economics, that's not the end of the world. You end up doing interesting things somewhere else. What about these people? So if I don't get to do my second feature film, what do I do?
That's a difficult question. Part of the
TV is one.
Yeah, TV. You can fall back on television.
Screenwriter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Screenwriter. You can be a teacher. That's there's been some Pierre Michel has worked on this, but I mean, we know some things that especially in the arts, if you're not successful as an artist, you fall back as a professor. Especially there's a lot of like teachers in film school who have done only one movie, and so they can take the students through the process of having to find finances and so on. But since they haven't had a really successful career, then they become teachers, and out of this one single experience that can last up to 10 years, they still make a future career. And the last thing is probably movie critics. I don't have information of this, but I know in the industry a lot of people say like, oh, he's just a frustrated, failed director. He's not a, that's why he's hating on my movie and so on.
But that's sort of interesting. You have, I mean, 230 directors.
I think you can afford to stalk them online to figure out exactly what they became, regardless of success. Like actually looking at the after, kind of the post-bust career and whether they're different for women and men.
No, we have 2,000.
Sorry.
No, this is for the survival
2000,
data.
That's still not big data. That's just medium data.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Yeah, the thing is we it's. For instance, I've hand-coded men and women, and the way with respect to identity, and there's no, of course, no in that in the French cinema, there's no transgender until today. So this is can be done for one variable. For later successes, it's something that we should keep in mind. We haven't really thought about this, no.
LinkedIn.
Yeah. No, but that's a good point. I know some examples of people who are now teaching in film school, or they sit on juries. There's a lot of things that you can do after. But I think that might be something to pursue in a later work.
Usually, that's where you have to manage a kind of portfolio of multiple professional roles, and then you can switch from one to the other depending on the risk and success in one role. But that's very often multiple job holding and switching. You try to learn what you are able to do, etc. But need some different, of course, information and data to check that.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.